Welcome to the Representing Rural Podcast. I am Candace Williams, and our guest today is Mayor Lincoln Barnett from the City of Hughes, and he's also the Delta Regional Director for RCA. Hi, Lincoln.
Hello, Candace. How are you?
Just fine. How are you today?
I'm doing well.
So, Lincoln, I would like for you to give the story of how you came or decided to come back to Hughes and eventually run for mayor and become the mayor.
Okay. It's really a long story, but I'll try to make it as brief as I possibly can. I grew up in a smaller rural area known as Blackfish, Arkansas, and I went to school in Hughes. So as a little kid, coming to Hughes in kindergarten was very eye-opening for me because I saw a lot of conditions that I didn't see on a daily basis out in the country. And so I, you know, have a distinct memory of going home, asking my mom, you know, as I would pass through town, I see these abandoned buildings and, you know, burnt up buildings. On the way to school, I wonder, you know, I knew something was wrong with that as a kid in kindergarten. And I recall, you know, going home and asking my mom one day after school what was wrong. And I always remember her telling me that there was a lot wrong with Hughes. And as a kid, that just didn't sit right with me. That made me want to do something about what was wrong. So I went to college in Atlanta, Georgia, at Morehouse College. I decided to return back home to work on my master's degree at Memphis Theological Seminary. And during that time that I returned home, a school board position became open to represent the more rural area of Hughes School District, which was Blackfish and Shell Lake. And originally my mother was approached about serving on that position. And she suggested that I do it. And at the time, I, you know, definitely had an interest and wanted to give back to the community that had instilled so much in me. And I jumped, you know, at the first opportunity to do so. And so my engagement back with the community of Hughes really began with me just doing a general Facebook group, because there was some negative news commentary that had came out about the town after our local grocery store had burned. And I just got tired of kind of seeing Hughes being cast in such a negative light. So I came up with a group called Project Uplift Hughes, and I wanted to be able to highlight positive things that were going on in the city of Hughes. And so already having that platform and that opportunity came to represent my community on the Hughes School Board, I jumped at it. As you know, our school district was consolidated in 2015. Mm-hmm. That also marked around the time that I began working with Rural Community Alliance, advocating for our school district and trying to keep our school open. After the consolidation, there was pretty much a little down period. It was like, you know, what to do next? Because it's like, what could be done? We've lost our school. And a lot of times you hear of communities just really having a bad breakdown after their school closes. And I can always recall Dorothy Singleton, you know, continuing to push me, oh, y'all need to keep meeting. Y'all need to. On one point, I was like, what are we meeting for? Mm-hmm. But then I realized, you know, we have to move beyond the school consolidation part, especially if we want to continue to survive as a city, in a sense. And so for me, I continue to look at ways that we could still be productive in our community, ways that we could still unite around things. Because a lot of times we think, you know, we really thought that the school was the heart of the community, but in actuality, it's the people, and there's still people here. And so with that being said, we can't afford to lose hope. And from there, you know, I really began to take a look at the city more directly. And, you know, I saw things that needed to be addressed and that needed to change. And I felt like, you know, well, I can do so much from an outsider standpoint, but sometimes you need to be inside
Right.
to affect change. And so I said, you know what? I'm going to run for mayor. And it was something that I had considered as early as sixth grade. I met the mayor of Hughes at my sixth grade graduation, which I had to speak. And someone pointed the mirror out to me. And when they pointed out to me and said, "That's the mayor of Hughes," and my immediate response was, "I want his job." And as a sixth grader, I wanted his job because, again, I felt that more could be, you know, something better could be being done with the right person in that position. And I felt that, you know, that was something that I wanted to give a shot. And so I decided to run, and I actually announced my campaign on my birthday, and I was elected at the age of 29. And so that's how I got here to Hughes, and I'm trying to work every day to try to make things better, and particularly so that other kids that are growing up, you know, will see somebody in their community really striving to help better it, and versus just accepting things as they are, or, you know, creating an environment for things to get worse.
That is an amazing story of how early on you saw that, hey, I know that I can be in this position and I know that I could really do some work to make this better, not just for me or my family, but for the children or the people coming after me. And that's really, a part of RCA is making sure that our youth network members understand that hey, it's okay, to go away, but remember home, remember, how it was for you to grow up, and remember or think of how you could possibly help improve your community. So you've been on the job for a year and a half, or going on 2 years?
Well, yes, it's going on 2 years.
Going on.
I'm in my second year now.
So I know none of us could have ever imagined that COVID would happen and that it would be around for this long. So when everything shut down in March, as the leader of Hughes, what was your initial reaction?
My initial reaction was, you know, I began to look at things closely when I started to see, you know, things sh begin to shut down. And I was like, you know what? I'm gonna really have to give some thought to what we're gonna do in Hughes, because a lot of times we think, oh, well, that's happened in this big city. It's not gonna affect people here. But I knew that was not the case. But a lot of people did have that perspective. Oh, that's, you know, that's happening in those big cities. Nobody from here been in and out of China or traveling internationally. In reality, there are people coming in and through Hughes that have been some of everywhere, or have made contact with other people that have been everywhere. And when you look at us being a city in which we have to travel 25 to 30 miles out to go grocery shopping, or to handle, you know, major business, we very well may be coming in contact with people that have been all around the world. And so when you have that understanding, you really begin to think, you know, what precautions do we need to take? And one of the things that I did as mayor was I immediately implemented a citywide curfew, requiring people to clear the streets at 6 p.m. And it was a bit of, it was met with controversy because, you know, folks don't like to be told what to do, and they didn't really see the emergency and what was going on. And I've even had some city council members, you know, come to me and was like, "Well, you can't do that," and da da da. And I said, "Well, I think this is something that's in the best interest of the city. We're trying to protect people." And at that point, you know, we were having like, I think at that initial point, we had maybe like one or two cases in St. Francis County. With me as a person that has a background in the biomedical sciences, I already knew that that was a drastic undercount and that those were just people that have, you know, been detected at this point. That was not a real true representation. And even the data that we have now is still not the most accurate. And so I knew then, I said, well, if one person has tested positive in St. Francis County, how many other people has that person been around without a mask, without taking any type of precautions? And how many other people unknowingly have been around that person and now have gone home, shook hands with other people, went to church? Someone very well in my city may have it. So we have to start making changes. And so I implemented that curfew. And one thing I've learned in being in political office is that you'll have people to oppose you even when you're doing things that are right or in their best interest. And so the diplomatic approach that I did take, I did not lift the curfew, but what I did do at a later date, I called an emergency meeting. And in that emergency meeting, I met with the council. I explained to them what was going on. I explained to them the effects that it could have on a city the size of Hughes. And I really just broke down, you know, how this virus can be transferred from one person to the next. Because at that time, you know, that was barely being done on the news media because it's just being downplayed from, you know, our highest officials. And so a lot of people were just brushing it to the side. But I've, you know, come to learn that a lot of times, so even with the most complex issues, people can grasp an understanding of it if you are willing to take the time to explain to them. So when I met with my council and the citizens that were in attendance, and we had a social distance meeting outside, at that point, we started having all of our city council meetings outside on the city hall lawn. And once I explained to them the severity of the situation, people were understood and they were on board. And with the ordinance that I proposed, it was an ordinance that gave me temporary powers, temporary extraordinary powers as mayor to provide for the health and safety of Hughes, Arkansas inhabitants during the COVID-19 global pandemic. And we passed an emergency clause. And so that allowed me to do things, several things that were key with trying to minimize and reduce the spread through Hughes. So that made that curfew that I imposed actually city law. And from there, I did like a total of maybe six or seven other additional policies that we, you know, require businesses to follow certain practices and making sure that people were socially distanced and have on their mask. And then, of course, that, you know, the mask has been a very political topic, and it should not be, especially in the case of a pandemic. You're talking about reducing spread, but a lot of people have weaponized the mask as a political tool. And I was glad to see that eventually our governor, but it was really far too late, get on board with trying to mandate a mask order. And he had a lot of us as mayors and county judges on the fence about what we can and could not do, because at the same time, it was, you know, like I said, it was controversial about having the city curfew, and we did not have backing from the state with it. And so, for quite a period of time, mayors and county judges, we were really left on our own without the backing that we needed from the state to try to implement safety precautions in our towns. And so you kind of have to just go ahead and move on your own. And, the other issue that we've had, trying to lead in a global pandemic is trying to get information about how many of your people are affected. And so I spent quite some time talking and had some heated conversations with some officials at the Arkansas Department of Health, because I felt like as a small city, we weren't given access to data as some of these larger towns. And I'm looking daily, and they're giving daily counts of, number of active cases, et cetera. And we still don't have that breakdown, but I will say that when I talked to our regional director, we had a heated conversation. And I expressed to her, that I felt that there was an inequity when it came to the access of data for a smaller town versus a larger town. And she really explained to me the issues that they were having at the Arkansas Department of Health when it came down to data. And she told me that she would do what she could to try to find me a resource where I could be able to get more accurate data. And she did come back with the, I think it's the ACHI website. And so that has been quite helpful. But now it's still kind of back in that vague phase. At one point in time, it was very specific. But, as these cases grow, that's more and more data that you have to compile and divide. So I do understand that. And I do understand that this was something that the state of Arkansas was not really adequately prepared for.
The state definitely was not prepared, especially for it to last this
No.
long. I know for speaking for myself, just getting, like you were saying, like getting that data, that was so hard for us living in smaller places and rural communities. So, and you spoke of this about some of your process of how you received that data, but how did you receive I guess before that conversation, how did you receive COVID information
I had to
concerning
look it up
your
myself.
community from the state? You had to look it up yourself.
So I spent a lot of time on the computer every day, especially at the initial phases of, this pandemic, looking and trying to access what data I could from the Arkansas Department of Health's website. But at that time, they were, they're only giving you data per county. So you don't know, how many cases you have in your community or the next community over. You just know that's in your county. And then Hughes is uniquely situated where we are fairly close to St. Francis County. And we actually, there's a city in St. Francis County that shares our zip code. And so at that same time, where we hadn't heard of any cases in Hughes and had heard of like one or two cases in St. Francis County, Crittenden County had reported directly that there were two cases in Horseshoe Lake. And for me, being the mayor of Hughes, I know what's like, well, Horseshoe Lake is like right next door. People are in and out at our Dollar General every day. So 9 times out of 10, I already know we have 10 or more cases in the city of Hughes, and it's just not being reported. So I spent a lot of time on that website, screenshotting and making my own posts and alerting people that, the cases are increasing in our county. We do know of active cases in this city. And so I remember I actually did a series of posts where I gave out the data for every surrounding county around us, because I know that we frequent all those counties, Lee County, St. Francis County, Crittenden County, Monroe County, all those, our people are in and out every day. And then we have a number of people that travel back and forth for work every day in Memphis, because we're fairly close to Memphis. So you take that into account. And at that time, their numbers were skyrocketing daily. And I, as a mayor of a small town, my job pay is part time. It's a full time position, but it's a part time pay position. And I have a full time job that's in Memphis. So I had to be aware of, where I'm traveling, and then I'm coming back to Hughes every day. And so I thought it was important that, I track that data in all these other areas so that my people would know, basically what they were going out to every day when they go out to either go to work or handle their business. But I spent a lot of time of having to gather that data on my own. And then there was a miscommunication with the health department. Initially, I was told that we would be notified every time that there was a positive case in the city of Hughes from the health department, but that was not really the case. But now with ACHI, we've been able to have a lot more, a better understanding of how many active cases that there are in the city of Hughes. I noticed it seems like their website changes and updates day to day. Now with school being on, they have data per school district, which really doesn't help us all that much because we're in a dual county school district.
Right.
And right now, Hughes numbers are below 20, so they're not giving us an exact number of cases,
Okay.
active cases. But I know that we're in that, we're below 20 cases presently as of September 28th. And what they're doing now is I think they're updating it in 14-day periods. So there's still a lag behind with the data that we do have access to.
So a lot of that goes to the credit of you, like just initially taking a hold of the procedures and the processes that needed to happen within your community to prevent the spread. So you're doing the things that were not popular among even city council members. Like it
Well,
worked.
I had to get them on board, and it didn't take long for me to get my council on board with the steps that we needed to take as a city. Like I said, it just involved actually sitting them down and explaining to them the severity of what was going on, and that it may be something we're hearing about in these big cities, but it's very well already here in our small town. And a lot of attention really has not, they really didn't start paying attention or even talking about rural communities and COVID until like well after this whole first wave happened. And to be honest, it was already taking effect in rural communities then. So we were kind of like an afterthought. And as a mayor of a rural town and community, I can't wait on being the afterthought of the state government or the afterthought of the federal government. My community is going to be my first thought. And so when I saw this going on, I knew right away that we need to try to take steps. Now, has everything worked out as planned? No. So a lot of stuff is, more easy when you think of it theoretically, but when you're trying to practically do stuff, you got people that don't want to listen. You got people that feel like you're infringing upon their rights because you tell them to wear a mask. So you have to deal with the nature of all of that while being persistent and trying to do what's right for everyone. And so, to be honest, a lot of people should not really, and this is my opinion, people really shouldn't take the time to even be selfish in this when you see it's affecting everybody. But unfortunately, you have a lot of people that have taken that approach about just being concerned about them and what they want to do. And we're seeing and living the effects of it. And I think what I did state that got cut off is that, in my town, I know of two people that we've lost due to COVID-19. And I know two people may not seem much to many other people, or especially people that are in large towns. It's like, oh, well, that's great, but that's devastating.
It is.
in a small town where we all know each other. And you miss that community member and what they brought to the table as a community member. And so, we're still grieving those two losses in the midst of still living in this pandemic. So 2020 has been a very rough year because of this, but I think we've been managing well and doing the best that we can with the resources that we have at our disposal.
So, how accessible has COVID testing been in your in Hughes, in your community?
That's been another challenge. So it at first there was no COVID testing in the city of Hughes. And I kept seeing these drive-through COVID testing events in West Memphis or Forest City. And I was like, well, instead of lagging on the phone, I was like, well, why is not happening in my community? I was like, well, I need to let my community know so that we can get them to Forest City or to West Memphis to get the free testing. And then initially, I mean, not initially, but later on, I said, you know what, when are we going to have testing in our community? Because there's a real need for it to happen right here because everybody doesn't have access to travel 25 plus miles and really fit a 50-mile round trip either way. And so I began to ask around, and we have a clinic here, the Lee County Cooperative Clinic. They operate in a Hughes satellite clinic here in town. And so I talked with them, and they came and they started doing weekly testing in the city of Hughes. And that lasted, I want to say it seemed like it was about a month. And then, of course, our top federal government leader started calling for a pushback on testing. And then that testing moved to biweekly and then to like monthly. And like now we're kind of, we just had two testing dates in September. And I know we have one scheduled for October. And so there's still an issue now with accessibility, but I am appreciative that we do have, testing dates where people can get tested right here in Hughes. The benefit about working with a Lee County Cooperative Clinic is that they have a number of other clinics in rural communities, and they spread their testing dates out now. And so I can at least, like last night someone contacted me to know to ask when was the next testing date. And I told them, but I said, well, there'll be one tomorrow at another one of their clinics. So they know there, so we at least have places that we can go to get testing. But I know that initially the delay in getting testing to Hughes had to do with the delay in the funding and the supplies being provided to the clinic to even do it. And so I think that still plays a role, is that we have clinics and that operate in our community, but they're still are dealing with issues of access themselves. And then you're a clinic like Lee County, where you're serving several communities, you have to do that strategically. And I really have been disappointed. Health department in our county and within our larger regions did not have some type of consistent testing site in each of our rural towns and communities, because I think that's something that's needed. Because again, you have you're here we're in rural communities where you have limited access to doctors and clinics, and then you have people that don't go and get tested because of barriers of transportation. And so when you have those on, those on-site testings, that helps break down those barriers that people may have living in rural communities.
Yeah, I don't feel like powers that be still understand how much of a barrier transportation connectivity that there's still big barriers in our communities. Because, you know, like it's seen through this lens of, oh, you know, it's money there for it, but like having okay access and then being able to apply for these funds and having the capacity to actually get these funds, that's another barrier. So just throwing money at a problem that, I mean, it's that has not been the issue, but even but we're at the basis of it, of even throwing the money at it. So it's still, both of those are still very big barriers for us living in rural communities. So I know there was a lot of CARES Act money that every state in the country received, and I know as a city you receive funding. So what, other than or including financial, like what assistance did your city receive from the state and federal government?
So we have not at this point received any CARES Act funding. We have been made aware through the Municipal League that we have basically money on the table for us to claim. But what we have to do, which I really don't understand this from a fiscal standpoint, is that we are required to first spend money that we really do not have in order to claim access to the money that is allotted for us under the CARES Act. So what we have to do, we have a certain deadline to show that we've made X, Y, and Z expenses due to the pandemic. And so we are going to try to get access to that funding, as much of it as we can, but within being fiscally reasonable, because again, like I said, we have to spend the money first, and then they are doing a reimbursement of our
Okay.
expenses. And so, to me, that kind of puts a lot of small cities in a bind, especially when you have small budgets that you really can't do much with. Because, you know, you have some cities that are struggling just to take care of their normal day-to-day procedure.
Right.
I personally don't think that's the best way to go about it. I think it would have been better to let the cities know that they had access to X, Y, and Z dollars and that they could use it. And if they did not use all of it, they would have to, of course, turn it back to the state. But we're being required basically to spend money that we do not have with the expectation of getting a reimbursement for it. So that's kind of,
That's ridiculous. That's my personal opinion.
So that's really my thought on it too. But I am going to try to utilize that. But then I'm a bit concerned about what does that do for cities when you're talking about staying within your budget. Because a lot of cities, in order to even do that, they're going to have to go back and amend their budgets, because then that will be a legislative audit finding of you overspending what you've previously budgeted. Now, one thing that I've done, because we have to be real about the fact that general revenue for a while went down during this pandemic. And so what I did to basically save money for the city was that I implemented a furlough day for all of my departments, with the exception of the police department. So we initially started with everybody having an additional off day during the week. And for us, we looked at what was our least busiest day, which is Thursday. And that was our off day, where everybody in the offices, street department, sanitation department, water department, everybody was off on every Thursday, unless there was some, you know, emergency or something that we needed to respond to. And we did that for about 3 to 4 months. And I ended that, and we're doing every other week. And I'm really considering continuing that until the end of the year. But that's been a safeguard for us as a city, just because there's been a general loss in revenue that's coming in from the state due to when we did have to somewhat shut down, and with everything else going on, even though our state really did not completely shut down as we should have.
Right. So that's how you have to prioritize city functions and
Yes.
personnel with the furlough.
So, like I said, if there's something urgent or something on one of those furloughs days, like with our water department, for instance, then we would come in. But we really have stuck to everybody being off on one day, on one additional day of the week, and then now we're on a alternating week with that schedule. So it's every other week we're off on Thursday. And to me, that's
Well,
just
ma'am.
been, to me, that's just been a wise safeguard to keep from one having to lay someone off. Because a lot of
Yes.
people were left with with losing their jobs during this pandemic. And I've talked to mayors that had to do, had to let go of people from every department. And so I've just really sat down at my desk and I was like, well, what can I do strategically to retain my city workers so that they would have a job and not lose their job during this pandemic? And that was the solution that I came up with. And nobody's excited about losing a day of work, but when I explained to my workers, what was at stake and what was the alternative, they got on board. And sometimes it seems like I have a challenge getting them to like they really don't want to come in now on Thursdays because they've gotten used to being off. But it's just adjustments that we've all had to make. But I think that was far better an adjustment to make than someone being left without a job.
There was. It sounds like, just listening to you, it sounds like you've been at this a while instead of this just being your second year.
Yes. It's,
I know you probably feel like it's
it
been more
seems
than
like it's been an eternity. But
two
no, this is still, I'm still in my first stretch as mayor, so.
So I just want to thank you for being a young leader, and seeing that it was important for you to come back home and invest in your community. So I hope this can spread across to our youth network members so they can see that it's not all glitz and glam, of course, but it's so rewarding to be a part of the necessary and the good change that our communities
Yes,
need.
and I think today, our towns and our communities are calling for people that are willing to think outside the box and be innovative and, work with others, and it's not going to always look like how things used to be. And that's a challenge that a lot of our communities have, is that everybody remembers glory days or, the old heydays and how things used to be, but we really have to move beyond that to see, well, how can things be now and tomorrow? And so when we put ourselves in that box, we really limit, the potential that our towns and our communities can have if we just can only hold on to the way things were. So it calls for people being innovative and working together and brainstorming and then implementing those ideas into tangible actions.
Thank you. So, any parting words that you want to give to younger members of the community or younger RCA members, rural residents that may be interested in becoming involved in the city and the community?
Initially, I want to say there is work for you to do. And I don't want, and I want people to understand that there's no need to second guess whether or not they can contribute positively to their community. You can. And it's a matter of you making a conscious decision to do that, and understanding that everything will not be peachy and happiness plan, but you work through those struggles and those challenges. And that's the beauty in it. And one of my favorite quotes from Frederick Douglass is that there's no progress without struggle. And so you have
That's
to
it.
have moments of struggle and persevere through those moments of struggles to reach that that progress that you seek and desire. So just because things get tough and challenging doesn't mean for you to give up and quit. So I think those are parting words that I would like to leave with people, is that they be persistent about bringing about positive change in their communities.
Well, it has been a pleasure. Thank you so much,
No
Mayor
problem.
Barnett.
Thank you for having me.
Now, time for our Rural Arkansas Power Moves. And we have three today. The first one being RCA Step Up for Literacy Reading Challenge. So, usually every October, we devote it to RCA Step Up for Public Education Walks. And we usually have, we host those across the state in the very varied rural communities that we're blessed to have a connection with. But, and they're always held to first celebrate our local public schools and second to make sure that everyone is prepared for the upcoming legislative sessions. Get everybody fired up for that. So, but this year we're pivoting to a more specific step up challenge. So that's the Step Up for Literacy Reading Challenge. So really just making sure that literacy and reading that is at the forefront when we're discussing public education, because we understand the importance of our children being able to read. And hopefully this challenge will foster a family-wide love of reading. The challenge started on October the 5th, this past Monday, and it goes into October 31st. And all it requires is 0 to 100. That's the age that's eligible to participate. So from the babies to, the nanas and the pawpaws. So just read 25 minutes a day. At the end of each week, you will send an email to rca@thenewrule.org, telling me that you how many days you read, how many minutes you read, and a few other things, and that'll be included on our Facebook page. So if you haven't already, make sure you follow our Facebook page, Rural Community Alliance, because we have the flyer up on that. And at the end of the month or the beginning of next month, the winners will be announced. A Goodreads gift card comes with whoever wins out of each category, and also a lot of cool exclusive RCA Step Up for Literacy Reading Challenge swag. Exclusive. We won't buy a lot of it, so it'll be specifically for those who participated and won the Step Up for Literacy Reading Challenge. So if you haven't already, again, go to our Facebook page and make sure you like it and get a look at the flyer. And if you have any questions, rca@thenewrule.org is the email address that you would send your questions to. The next Rural Arkansas Power Move is RCA's Rural Pitch Competition, which will be held during Global Entrepreneurship Week, and it will be held on November the 20th, Friday, November the 20th at 6:30. So to enter the pitch competition, again, you have to send an email with the 2-minute video of your pitch, your idea to rca@thenewrule.org. If you have any questions or if you're interested in knowing more information about that, we will have information posted on our Facebook page again next week, all of our social media platforms. But if you need immediate answers, rca@thenewrule.org. You can email that account all the time if you have any questions. So we're very excited about that. And having a strategic goal of supporting rural entrepreneurship from here on out. So this will be our first event or first initiative with that. So we're very excited about that. And our last Rural Arkansas Power Move is the Arkansas Community Development Society Conference. And it will be held next Thursday, October the 15th. It'll be virtual. And the conference starts at 8:30, but it's the board meeting from 8:30 to 9. The first session will start at 10, and it's from 10 to 11, and it's around effective and positive communication. And that's something we all need help with right now.
The next session is from 1 to 2, and it will feature Ford, Arkansas, and they will have a discussion on how education has been flipped upside down during a pandemic and how we can pivot and move forward from here. And the last session will be held from 3 to 4 and Barnhill Orchards, and the Arkansas Procurement Technical Assistance Center will be the feature presenters. And that will be a lot of good conversation around small business and entrepreneurship and how they had to change operations and lessons learned during this year. So if you're a community organization, someone wanting to start a community organization, or a resident of any community, this is a very valuable conference for you to attend. Again, it's Thursday, October the 15th. It'll all be, virtual Zoom sessions, and go to their Facebook page to get the links to the Zoom sessions and things like that. And you can find them on Facebook at Arkansas Community Development Society. Thank you all for joining this week. Until next time, you take care.